The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Jesus passed through towns and villages, teaching as he went and making his way to Jerusalem. Someone asked him, "Lord, will only a few people be saved?" He answered them, "Strive to enter through the narrow gate. For many, I tell you, will attempt to enter, but will not be strong enough. After the master of the house has arisen and locked the door, then will you stand outside knocking and saying, 'Lord, open the door for us.' He will say to you in reply, 'I do not know where you are from.' And you will say, 'We ate and drank in your company, and you taught in our streets.' Then he will say to you, 'I do not know where you are from. Depart from me, all you evildoers.' And there will be wailing and grinding of teeth when you see Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and all the prophets in the kingdom of God, and you yourselves cast out. And people will come from the east and the west, from the north and the south, and will recline at table in the kingdom of God. For behold, some are last who will be first, and some are first who will be last." The Gospel of the Lord. There's the fairly famous story of Michelangelo. I don't know if he really said it or not, but when asked how he created beautiful sculptures like the David or the Pietà, he said he just looked at the stone, he looked at the marble, and he chiseled away everything that wasn't the David, that wasn't the Pietà, these beautiful works of art. But to him, in his mind, it wasn't so much about creating something, but taking away what wasn't supposed to be there. I think that could be a helpful way to think about how God often sees us. He often sees us as an unfinished work of art, so to speak, and his job isn't to change us or to make us into something we're not supposed to be, but to chisel away and get rid of the stuff that is not close to him, the stuff that is sinful, the stuff that is connected to this world, the stuff that does not make us glorify God as he wants us to. I think that's a helpful perspective with today's gospel, because it can be a little bit tricky to understand. It seems like Jesus is kind of mixing his metaphors again. We're not sure if he means that we need to be stronger to enter through the narrow gate by ourselves, or if we just need to be close to him, or if we're just going to be the ones standing outside the gate that are ignored. But I think the question that is asked is very important to provoke this story from Jesus. It sounds like there's a random person from the crowd that simply kind of shouts out at him and says, "Lord, will only a few people be saved?" Now, we hear this, and I think it's natural in our kind of Christian world to hear that in terms of salvation, of like, well, how many people can enter heaven? But again, this is before Jesus has even gone to Jerusalem, before his death and resurrection. So it certainly applies in some ways to eternal salvation. But in the context of what Jesus is preaching about from town to town, it's really about how he's going to come and reclaim what has been lost from God. Talked about it a few weeks ago, that Jesus came to take his stuff back from the evil one and to lead us into freedom. So I think by saying, "Will only a few people be saved?" the person in the crowd is really saying, "Jesus, do we have any hope? Because if only a few people are going to be saved, presumably that's going to be your apostles, the 12 that are closest to you. Presumably that's going to be the ones that left everything and followed you. But if we're just in this random town that you're passing through, well, we're definitely not in that small, intimate group." We might also be thinking, and if your victory is going to be so great and so wide that everyone gets saved, well, then we don't need to worry about much either. But there's great hope because we can be led into freedom, but that's just going to happen because Jesus showed up and we got lucky. We don't really have to do anything to cooperate with it. I think Jesus cleverly avoids both of those extremes. He doesn't want us to fall into despair thinking that only a few people can receive this victory that he won. But he also doesn't want us to be so presumptive that the group is so big that we'll automatically kind of fall into it. Instead, what does he want us to do? He wants us to strive to enter through the narrow gate. To not seek the road that is wide and that leads to perdition and loss, but to seek to be strong enough to enter through the narrow gate. Again, that's kind of a weird metaphor to use. Usually you don't need to be strong enough to enter through a narrow gate. You can think of different images that Jesus uses, like the camel passing through the eye of a needle, that might be a better explanation of what Jesus is getting to. Right? When he uses that image, he says, it is impossible for human beings, but for God, all things are possible. So in that time, when Jesus presents this difficult task, he says, well, it's only possible if you rely on God. That's not what he says today. Instead, he says that you need to be strong enough. In English, we naturally think of being kind of strong physically. But in the Hebrew world, this would have been more of akin to being determined. Right, that you have to be set on reaching that goal. So much about physical or even kind of emotional strength, but being set firmly on one task. To say, above all things, I want to be led to union with God. So I think what Jesus is encouraging the crowds to do is to see that they can have those things chiseled away, to use the image of Michelangelo. That it's not just for a few people, so they're hopeless. Nor should they just kind of ignore Jesus' preaching and teaching, because whatever he's going to do in Jerusalem is going to fix them anyways. Instead, their job is to be set firmly with Jesus, to look to imitate him and to conform their lives to him. Again, to maybe mix the metaphors a little bit, then rather of thinking this narrow gate as a way that we need to be pulled through or something we need to walk through ourselves, it's really about kind of shaping ourselves to be in the shape of Jesus. Be in the shape of the Son of God so that we can enter into heaven, yes, but also to be saved and free from the things of this world. Brothers and sisters, I think that's an important call for us today. To realize that God is working on us, that he never sees us as finished, but always wants to chisel away those things that are not of him. Those things that are not the image and likeness of God. It's to chisel away those things that aren't like Jesus. Not because we're bad or because it's impossible. Because that's what makes us into what we are called to be. It's what makes us into the saints in this life and able to enjoy life with him forever in heaven. Actually, I think that's what the author of the letter to the Hebrews is getting at in the second reading. When he talks about how discipline is not a bad thing. That parents discipline their children so that they can learn skills. First, just how to do simple things like walking and talking. They have to force them to do things that maybe aren't comfortable or aren't easy. But by doing that over and over and over again, they're able to grow and mature. And as children get older, they have to discipline them even more, teaching them kind of the right way and what the things that will lead them into either personal pain or to hurting others. But all through that, the goal is not to inflict pain on their children, but is to discipline, is to kind of break away the things that are not good. I think the author to the Hebrews sees that as Christians, oftentimes that's what God allows to happen to us. Not that he wants to cause the pain or suffering for us, but by disciplining us, he wants us to grow in those virtues, to grow in that imitation of Christ, his son. So when we experience times of personal weakness or even temptation and sin, times that we're not as patient as we would like to be, times that we struggle to forgive or to love our neighbor, maybe times that we give in to anger or lust or other strong emotions, that those aren't so much times to beat ourselves up, but to see that they're moments that can discipline us. Can help to work out the things that are keeping us from being like Jesus. That can form us into that image of Christ that allows us to enter through the narrow gate. Because in some ways in the gospel, Jesus is simply trying to tell the crowds that God is not finished with them. And it wasn't just about one experience of Jesus, of hearing him come through their town and maybe heal a few people and preach a few sermons. Instead, that was just the start. And God has never finished with forming them into what he wants them to be. And so their job isn't to focus on, am I part of the small group or am I part of the big group that might be saved? The point is to be strong, is to be steadfast and focused on being united to Christ. Whether they're part of the small group of the 12 apostles that have left everything to follow Jesus, or frankly, they're just somebody that heard Jesus speak once. Even that person, Jesus wants them to know that God is not finished with them. He wants to continue to work with them, to discipline them in ways that are maybe painful and uncomfortable, but ways that lead them to be able to imitate Christ in his goodness, that leads them in a life of holiness. So all the days of their life here in this life, they can experience eternal joys. Not just things that pass or are fleeting, but things that would ultimately lead us to union with him in heaven. So brothers and sisters, let us strive as well today to enter through the narrow gate, to know that we don't do that on our own or with our own abilities and skills, but that allowing God's grace to work in us, he can slowly break away those things that are not good, those things that are sinful, those things that lead us to slavery and attachment to the world. And that by embracing that discipline and sometimes that pain and suffering, we can come to be like Christ and be formed into that image of the Son of God that fits through the narrow gate. That doesn't lead to death and destruction, but instead leads to life and joy. A life and joy that we experience in God's presence in this life, and a life and a joy that we can experience for all eternity with him in heaven.